Well, in this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about dealing with pests, insect and otherwise, around the house and garden, and trying to do that in an environmentally sensitive way. And our guest for the program is the co-author of a book that's titled Tiny Game Hunting, Environmentally Healthy Ways to Trap and Kill the Pests in Your House and Garden. It is a paperback book. It's published by the University of California Press. It is not terribly expensive. And if you're interested in exploring this way of dealing with pests, you certainly can look for the book. And then if you have a question, you should call in. And if you, there's a particular, for example, a particular insect that you're trying to deal with or some other problem and you're not quite sure how to do it, you can call in here and we'll see if we can have a suggestion for you. In Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number is 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, and that means if it would be a long-distance call, use that number and we'll pay for the call. 800-222-9455. So again, 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. You got questions, you can give us a call. Ms. Klein, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be on your show.
It's I'm interested in this area, and I'm sure that there are other people who are too. As over the years, we've done a lot of shows on this subject, and we've had people from the university on. And it does seem to me that, a growing number of people would like to at least think about alternatives to chemical pesticides, and that people are maybe now just a little less apt to immediately reach for a spray can of something than they have been in the past.
I think that's true, and I think that it's partly a result of all the studies that are coming out now that are telling us that our groundwater has been affected by pesticide contamination, and children are being affected neurologically by pesticide exposure, and there's just a lot more awareness now than there was before, I think, on the dangers of pesticides.
And I think it's something that is worth people thinking about when we talk about the issue of chemicals in the environment, and particularly if you live in a part of the country like this, a lot of attention goes to agriculture, and
yes,
it's certainly something worth talking about and thinking about. But I think people also do have to appreciate just how much, if that is a problem with the environment, and if we get chemicals in groundwater and so forth, that chemicals that are sprayed on people's lawns, that are sprayed on golf courses, in public parks, all sorts of things like that. These are very, very significant. And, you know, one might not think about it all that much, just what you do in your yard. But you also have to keep in mind, you know, what your neighbors do and the people across the street and the people down the block. And then, in fact, that adds up to a significant amount.
That's right. And any restaurant that you go into might have been sprayed. If you ride a bus, it might have been sprayed. It's just It's just an endless sort of more and more and more and more. And because it's invisible and a lot of times you don't smell it, you're just not aware of how much you might have been exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But we as consumers can stop this toxic tide by using alternative methods and by, you know, getting other people to use them.
We can, I'm sure we'll talk, we have a caller here, and I want to promise this person we'll get right to them in Urbana,
okay,
so they can hold on here, and we'll talk about whatever anybody wants to talk about. But I think generally speaking, I wonder whether there isn't this perception that people have is that you that when we talk about alternative, more environmentally sensitive ways of dealing with pests, is that somehow they're not as good, and that we're still going to have to put up with sort of a level of infestation that maybe we would rather not, in exchange for having less environmental impact. Do you think that's true?
That's a complete fallacy. Mm-hmm. I think that once you understand the habits of the pest that you're dealing with, you can actually sometimes be even more effective. There are more insects now that are resistant to commercial pesticides than ever before. And so they're becoming less effective, and as a result, people are having to use stronger pesticides. But if you really, I'm convinced that using the alternative methods can be just as effective, if not more effective.
We have
organic gardeners are showing now that their yields are as good or better than a lot of commercial traditional growers.
Okay. Well, we have a caller, and we'll just talk to as many different people as we can as we move through this part of the show. And we'll start out with someone who's listening in Urbana, and this is line one.
Yes, I have had occasional carpenter ants, and I've had this for years, but it isn't any large infestation at all. It's, you know, the occasional ant here and there, and what I do now is just to kill it. Once in a while, when I've called a pest control place, they say that I should sort of spray the outside, but now what I do is just the ants come in, and when I find them, we just kill them, and maybe 20 a year, so it's not a big deal, or, you know, during the summer. Is there anything else I should do?
It's usually, if there's just one ant, they could be crawling around looking for a place. Carpenter ants, though, can be quite destructive in your house, so you do really need to be vigilant. There's a bait that you can make that using boric acid, which is a very effective and fairly safe way to kill ants. And you could use that. But I think I certainly, when ants are coming into my house, I just kill them one by one unless I have a huge infestation. And then I get out a bait that will kill the colony.
Where would this boric acid be put?
You would set it out where you see the ants.
I see. There are actually commercial products that are boric acid. I mean,
I've seen that. Taro, and I believe Drax. You can buy those.
And you just put them out where you see the ants.
Yes.
And then they go. Then the ants go there, and then they go back to the nest, and they kill the nest.
Yes, that's right.
That's where they work.
The way that most of the ants that come in the house, they take a little bit back to the nest and feed the queen with it.
Right. Okay. Okay. I'm sorry to. But I don't want to buy the book. Could you spell those two products that you mentioned?
Oh, Taro is T-E-R-R-O.
C-E-R-R-O.
Yes, and Drax, D-R-A-X.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
All right, very good. Other questions
now,
are...
One other thing about the carpenter ants, that if you do have an infestation, you can drill a hole and blow in diatomaceous earth, which is a very fine powder that cuts their ecoskeleton. That's another way to take care of them if they're inside the walls and you know they're in there.
That's something that I know I have heard people talk about as a way to control slugs if they have them out
right.
in the garden.
It's very effective for a lot of pests, cockroaches too.
Very good. Well, other questions are welcome. All you need to do is call us 333-WILL, toll-free. 800-222-WILL. I guess this maybe also gets at an issue. One of the things maybe that people need to think about is just what sort of environment are they interested in? I mean, do they want to make sure that they're never going to see a single bug in their house, or can you cope with, you know, maybe you see an ant every once in a while? And I think actually I certainly would say that we have a guy who's an entomologist, an extension guy who's occasionally here on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I think that he has tried to do over the years is to sort of say to people, well, what can you put up with? I mean, can you actually coexist? And if you have if you think you have an insect problem, ask yourself, well, now is this really a problem?
Exactly.
Because a lot of insects will, you know, maybe they might be around for a little while, but then eventually they'll go away.
Yes.
And that's something I've been really interested in, and that this idea that says, well, first of all, you got to figure out just how serious the problem is this, and so what do you want to do about it?
Some people say that, you know, even if a pest has eaten a quarter of your plant, the plant is still going to survive. And tolerance is a very good idea when it comes to insects. First of all, they outnumber us so astronomically that there's no way we could possibly get rid of all of them. And even if we did, it would be an ecological disaster. Ants, for instance, and termites recycle all the dead wood in the world. And if they weren't doing that for us, there would be so much dead wood we couldn't grow any new plants. So it's really, really, I think an appreciation of bugs and insects is really important. And also... the realization that when it comes to tiny game hunting, the very best ones are the insects themselves that prey on other insects.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can, one of the mistakes that people make when they spray pesticides in their garden is that they kill all the good bugs that will eat the bad bugs a lot more effectively than they could manage on their own.
We have a number of callers here now, so we'll try and take them in the order they came in. Again, we'll start here with somebody in Urbana, and it's line number one. Hello.
Is that me?
Yes.
I wanted to mention about taro.
Yes.
I've had ants for several years, and I've tried the taro, and it doesn't deter them. I had this year, in last year and this year, both, I had that taro stuff out for 2 months, and they just were still coming.
Okay, here's something for you to try that's actually probably more effective, and it's not. Sometimes the taro tends to kill the ants more quickly than it should, and the ants, as I said, need to take the poison back to the colony and get it to the queen. But if you can take a cup of sugar and 2 cups of boiling water and dissolve the sugar in the water, and then add 2 tablespoons of boric acid, then you've got a homemade ant poison. And all you need to do is get a little canister, like a film canister, and fill it with a cotton ball or sponge or something and saturate it with the poison, and then set the little canister out where the ant trails are.
Uh-huh.
And that's a very effective.
Okay, tell me that prescription again, the recipe.
The recipe is you take a cup of sugar.
1 cup of sugar.
2 cups of boiling water.
2 cups of water?
Yes, and dissolve the sugar, and then add 2 tablespoons of boric acid.
And 2 tablespoons of boric acid. And soak that in, soak cotton wad in that?
Yes.
Well, Why does this taro seem to work for some people and not others? Why didn't it work for me?
That's a good question. I was thinking maybe because when I tried it recently, it seemed to kill the ants right away. And what you really want them to do is to take the poison back to the colony.
Uh-huh.
Do you also use barriers against your ants? Do you find where they're coming in and do a little silicone caulking to discourage them from coming in that place?
I was going to do that, but then I got desperate and I sprayed with some ant poison.
Well, the other thing is if you want to kill them instantly, you don't need to use a poison. You just get a little soapy water in a spray bottle.
Yeah.
And just a squirt of dish soap in a bottle of water and spray them and it kills them instantly.
Really?
And you don't have to worry about the poison. And when you wipe them up, your floor is a little cleaner.
Okay, soapy water. These are coming in under the woodwork, under the window.
Uh-huh.
Over my sink.
Uh-huh. Well, you can also, use a little, like I said, a little silicone caulk. I mean, barriers are very effective against ants. They're persistent, and you have to keep, they'll find a new hole, and you'll have to caulk that up. But eventually, you'll get the best of them. You'll discourage them eventually.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right, thanks. And again, I think that this fellow that we've had who's done this show with us a lot, that is, in fact, one of the very first things that he says. If we're talking about an insect that is coming from outside in, if you can figure out how it's getting in, mm-hmm. then and plug up the hole, and obviously an ant's pretty small, so it could be getting into a small space.
Right.
But that would be one of the first sort of things that you could think about is try to figure out how they're getting in and then block it up.
Exactly. It's like not having screens on your windows and thinking the mosquitoes aren't going to come in. They will.
Okay. And let's go to next caller would be in Lamont, Illinois. This is on our toll-free line here, line 4. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A question that probably pertains to all of Illinois, especially in the fall on the south side of a building where the sun is shining on it and it's nice and warm. They're not really pests, I don't think, box elder bugs and ladybugs. Got any suggestion there? And I'll hang up. Thank you.
Yes, I have a chapter in my book called Occasional Invasions, And box elder bugs and ladybugs are both of those. And as you pointed out, they're really not going to do any harm. They can just be somewhat annoying. And box elder bugs, of course, live on box elder trees, and some people have suggested cutting down the trees to get rid of them, and I think that's a really silly idea. And if they come in the house, of course, you can vacuum them up. And the same thing goes for the ladybugs, which are probably imported from Asia, where they like to congregate on limestone cliffs. And they, in this country, they find houses that remind them genetically or some in their genetic memory of the limestone cliffs. But they're not going to do any damage if you can tolerate them.
All right. And as both ladybugs are also, people do like to have them around because for a reason you talked about earlier, that is they will eat some of the other things that we would prefer not to have.
Exactly. They're wonderful. They're wonderful tiny game hunters. Some people recommend that because when they're congregating like that, they might be in a sort of a hibernating stage, and they say scoop them up and put them in the refrigerator, and then you can release them in the warm weather in your garden when they'll be hungry and will do the pest eating that you want them to do.
Mm-hmm. In past, I think people have been kind of interested in this idea of using insects to control other insects, and have thought about using ladybugs that way and mantis. Mm-hmm. And there are actually, I guess, places that you can buy them.
Absolutely,
and
there are many places now.
You can then the idea is to take them out and release them in your garden. Sort of the downside, though, is that there's no way to guarantee that they will stay in your garden where you want them.
That's true, especially for ladybugs. But there is a mail order pest that you can get, which is the green lacewing, that will stay in the garden and is enormously effective. And when you order it from one of these supply houses, it comes in a package with these tiny, tiny little minuscule eggs. And you just, what I did when I ordered them was I just got little Dixie cups and put a few eggs in each Dixie cup and stapled it to the leaf of a tree around the garden. And it was impressive what they were able to do.
Mm. And what do they like to eat?
Well, they love aphids, and there's a whole slew of things that they'll eat. My mind is blanking a little bit here. They're voracious eaters. The other thing that you can do when you order these, what I call mail order mercenaries, there's a little bit of you can also get the bugs like a little bit of sweet, and you can spread that around, a commercial kind of honeydew that will keep them in the garden and keep them from going away.
Okay. Well,
the green lace wings will eat mealy bugs, thrips, scale, and they'll also eat the eggs of a lot of worms that like to eat your plants.
All right, very good. Well, we'll keep going here. We'll go next to a caller in Champaign. This will be line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I have a problem which is fairly typical, I understand, in Illinois. I'm fairly new to central Illinois, and that's with spiders. We seem to be constantly cleaning and getting rid of spider webs, and also we do have ants in our house. So that's one of the questions. I saw an infomercial on TV for a product called Pest Defense. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Mm.
And basically what it does is you plug it into the wall outlet, electrical outlet, and it sends some kind of electrical impulse throughout the house.
Mm-hmm.
That apparently annoys the pests and they go away.
Right.
My concern is, and they say this is safe. We have a little 3-year-old daughter, and I'm very concerned about her. The impact of anything like that on her. Are you aware of anything like that?
Oh, yes, I'm very aware of them, and they tend to sell a lot of them for mice and rats.
Okay.
And I worry about them too. We humans cannot hear the sound that they emit.
Right.
But how do you know that it isn't in some way going to be harmful to us?
Exactly. And they say that it, FCC and all have approved this, and it's been proven safe, but I'm not sure. I mean, it's obviously a commercial for their product, so if there's any doubts about the safety of product, they wouldn't say it, but I wondered if you can shed any light on that.
Well, one thing when it comes to pesticides, we don't have a very, very good history of claiming something that, you know, is safe and then having it turn out to actually be safe.
Okay. May I ask another question?
Sure.
We also have rabbits who eat pretty much anything we plant. I'm not trying to get to kill them or anything, but I would like them to. I'd like to offer them alternative food, or I believe it or not, I even made a fresh salad for them once I put it out there. They seem to ignore it. They like plants and flowers. Any suggestions to sway them?
One of the things that I do suggest is that you might try planting a little sort of barrier garden that would be just for the rabbits.
Okay.
But also rabbits you can use repellents against, and they don't like things like blood meal and...
Sorry, what was that again?
Blood meal.
Okay.
That's that you can sprinkle on, or the smell of fish is sort of offensive to rabbits, so you uh-huh. could take fish emulsion and mix it with water and spray it on the plants.
Okay.
Onions are another deterrent.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Okay,
because we've tried, I've gone to stores and they've suggested certain plants, for example, I can't recall the name, but that seemed to be actually more popular with them. They suggested dried blood and, you know, some other chemicals, pest repellents and stuff. Nothing has worked, and I don't like to put up fences because that, you know, has a negative aesthetic effect.
Well, you could, the other thing, I don't know if you've tried sprinkling hot red pepper.
Okay. No, I haven't.
And make sure the plants are damp, a little bit damp first, so it'll stick on them.
Okay.
I think they can be pretty much of a problem. Skunks will eat them. So will snakes.
Skunks will eat rabbits?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Small ones. But I think that this is also a case where your best defense might end up being a fence. But try some of these things first.
I'll do it. Thank
you very
much.
Thanks, Tom. I think that's also, we in the growing season, we now for a lot of years have done regular gardening shows, and this is one of those questions that's come up a lot. And we've talked about, people have suggested these various kinds of alternatives, but I sort of have this feeling that maybe when it comes to rabbits, if they're eating your plants, what it does come down to is constructing a physical barrier that's just going to make it so that the rabbit just can't get at the
mm-hmm.
plant. That may be the thing that is going to be the final
effective.
Thing that's going to be the most effective thing.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing, I know also from time to time we've talked about the devices like that are supposed to drive away insects or things like mice and rats. And I guess the consensus of all the people I've ever talked to about them is that they just don't work.
What we say in our book is that if you are tempted to buy one, be sure that you get one that has a money-back guarantee.
Good thought. We're about midway through this part of Focus 580. I guess I should introduce again our guest. We're talking with Hilary Dole Klein. She is the co-author, along with Adrian Wenner, of a book that's titled Tiny Game Hunting, Environmentally Healthy Ways to Trap and Kill the Pests in Your House and Garden. It is in paperbacks, published by the University of California Press. And if you're interested in exploring some alternatives to pesticides, when you're dealing with pests in the house and garden, you might want to take a look at it. And, of course, questions are welcome here if you want to call in. 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere. You can hear us, 800-222-9455. Our next caller is in Pena, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Our heritage group has 4 antique log cabins, and we have... A carpenter ants in them, and I wanted to get the name of the commercial products we might use to get rid of them.
Okay, well, the diatomaceous earth, which is a... diatomaceous, should I spell that?
Yeah.
Okay, it's D-I-A...
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. to have it in front of me, D-I-A T-O-M-A-C-E-O-U-S.
C-E-O-U-S. Earth?
Diatomaceous earth, yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually microscopic, fossilized, tiny little microscopic razor-sharp granules.
Mm-hmm.
And you could use a powdered pyrethrum combination with silica gel dust.
Pyrethrum powder? With what kind of dust?
Silica gel dust, which is also similar to diatomaceous earth. It affects their exoskeleton and dries them up and kills them that way.
Would you just put? Could you put those near the nest? I can see the.
Are the nests outside or are they inside the?
Well, they're in the logs, but I can see the sawdust on the floor.
If you can drill a little hole in it, you could blow these products right into the nest.
I see. Mm-hmm. That
strands can also be baited, like I said, with that. Diatomaceous earth and sugar bait.
Do you put the diatomaceous earth with sugar? You say?
No. I'm sorry. The sugar and the boric acid bait that I talked about.
I remember you. Yeah, I heard that.
Okay.
Boric acid
and sugar bait.
I could make that up, couldn't
yes,
I?
Good, because carpenter ants like sugar, and they'll leave their nests and forage for food.
That's with the boiling water and sugar and boric acid.
Now, another simple thing that you could try, where you see the traces of their nests, is just try putting a vacuum there and trying to vacuum them out.
Oh, and around the hole. I mean,
yes.
Just pull them out, huh?
Yes.
That sounds like a good idea. Well, that's just fine. I'll see if I can find some of these things. And
good luck.
All right. Thanks for the call. One thing we just want to mention as far as people handling the diatomaceous earth.
Yes.
It is something that you do want to be careful handling. You don't want to get it in your eyes. You don't want to breathe it in. You'd probably, if you can avoid getting it on your skin, all those sorts of things. And it's a powder. It's like a dust.
So you don't want to inhale it.
Right.
It's very, very fine.
Right.
On the other hand, they do feed it to animals to control intestinal parasites. So it's not going to poison you
really.
if you ingest it.
All right. Let's see. We'll go next to a caller, somebody in the Chicago area, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. Actually, one. I was wondering when you were talking about the boric acid, I had the impression that you had to be very careful about where you put it because it can be toxic to people and animals.
Yes, if you, this is why when I was talking about making the bait, you would put it into a little film canister and it would be maybe a good idea even to label it as to what it is because
yes.
It does have, especially since you put the sugar in it, it might taste good. It won't kill an animal or a child, but it would definitely make them sick if they ingested it.
Yeah. Now, I have a lot of organic products, food in my house.
Yes.
And periodically I get an infestation of cereal moths.
Yes.
The way I've tried to deal with it is to find out what kind of food they have found that they're
mm-hmm.
feeding on.
Mm-hmm.
And even when I've tracked it down, what else can I do?
They have some wonderful traps that you can buy now. They're sticky traps that you can put in your pantry, and they have a pheromone scent that will attract the moths into the trap.
Oh,
but if you ever find them in any food, that food has got to be thrown away.
Oh, yes, I do that automatically. Yes. I've learned now. I keep things very tightly contained or in the fridge. But once in a while, now I think I can't find what they're eating, but they seem to be thriving somewhere.
Sometimes they'll get, there might be a little flower or something in a crack or crevice, and they'll have gotten into that in the kitchen.
I discovered that. Now, what kind of traps? Where do I get them? And
you can get them. A lot of garden supply stores, at least here in California, are carrying them now. Or you can get them through the mail, through organic gardening catalogs like Gardener's Supply.
I see.
Okay. They're pretty easy to find now.
And they're just called cereal moss
traps? No, they're called pantry pest traps.
Pantry pest traps.
Yes.
Okay, and my last question is, I didn't quite get the name of your book.
Tiny Game Hunting.
Ah, okay. Thank you very much.
All right, yes, thanks.
Good luck.
And these traps that you're talking about, that they work just because they attract the insect in. And they have something sticky there that just grabs them, so they don't have any pesticide or anything.
So they're perfectly safe. And keep in mind that pests like moths and they rely very, very heavily on their sense of smell. They don't even see that well, and so pheromones are extremely effective.
Aha. Uh-huh. Great.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you. We'll go to Belgium for our next person here. Line number 4. Hello.
Hello. I would like to point out to your guests that we here in the Midwest, in the Champaign-Urbana, East Central Illinois area, have a serious pest in the Asian brown beetle that looks extremely a lot like the ladybug. And I don't know that it eats the same things as the ladybug, but it's a very big pest that was introduced into this area just to control a pest in southern Illinois. And now we live with a horrible mess every fall when they try to get in our houses.
Uh-huh.
So introducing species into areas is a very dangerous little trick to be doing. Consider
It certainly is. And a lot of them were, I guess they were introduced to control aphids in trees, right?
I'm not exactly sure what they were used to control. I do know that they were imported more than once to get it done. And then when they finally got done, it...
So do you? What do you do? What do you? I know that they can get into, if they get into your house, they can be quite a nuisance.
Yeah, they're a terrible nuisance, and they also, some people say they bite, some people say they don't. So I'm not exactly sure about that, but they look a very great deal like the ladybug.
Yes.
The normal ladybug, do we say? Except they're a brown in color, and their spots are darker.
Right. They're almost an orange color, right?
Orange. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Orange.
Uh huh. Some people call them Halloween beetles.
Yeah, because they show up about that time.
October.
Yeah. But
so vacuuming them up.
Oh, you can try anything you want. There's millions of them. You're not going to get them all. There's no way.
It must be kind of horrifying when it happens.
Yeah, it happens all the time here. I'm sure other people can attest to the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you for the call. We'll go on here, and the next person in line is in Champaign. That's line 2. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I rent an apartment in this really old house, and the basement hasn't been cleaned in years. There are spider webs everywhere, and I'm just wondering, I know that spiders aren't in every web, but I'm wondering how they can survive in this small space and what I can do to get rid of these webs or get rid of the spiders.
Okay, well, if a spider web is dusty, chances are it's not being used by a spider anymore, and it's perfectly okay to vacuum them up.
Okay.
Spiders are performing a very good function in the house because they're eating all kinds of much more dangerous pests like fleas and mosquitoes and flies and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they're not poisonous spiders, it's a good idea to try to tolerate them.
Okay. Well, how do I know if they're not poisonous spiders?
Well, there are only 2 poisonous spiders, and I'm not sure if you even have them in Illinois, but here in California we have the black widow spider,
right,
which you can tell because it has the little hourglass-shaped red spot underneath its belly.
Mm-hmm.
We have drawings of these in the book, and also a spider called the violin spider, which is... I think it's more of a problem in the South.
Yeah, I don't think we have, but there is another spider that we do have in Illinois that can be a problem, and that's the brown recluse.
Yeah.
Well, that is the violin spider.
Oh, that is the violin spider. Oh, okay.
That spider is spreading. It's traveling throughout the United States.
Hmm.
The bites are fairly rare from that spider, but they can be very, very, very unpleasant.
Yeah, I've actually been bitten by one of those.
Yeah.
Really?
So that's why I'm sort of scared. Is it in the house that you live in?
I'm sorry?
In the place where you live right now?
No.
Oh.
This is actually in Missouri where I know they're really prevalent.
Vacuuming is always a good way to get rid of spiders.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks. And I guess my understanding about the brown recluse was that it was sort of aptly named because it was reclusive, and it was
the kind you
almost have to go out of your way to find one because they're not going to be out in the open. They like to hide. They like
to be
in places like in wood piles
and little
of the way corners and stuff.
If they do get in the house, one of the things they might do if you happen to have a habit of throwing your clothes on the floor and leaving them there, they might crawl into them.
Ew.
That would make them a little bit dangerous. So they say that, you know, always shake out your clothes before you put them on if they've been on the floor.
Yeah. Spiders creep me out. I'm sorry. That's something I have a hard time coexisting with.
I know. I've been thinking quite a bit about that, and I just think it must be because some of them are so dangerous that we have an instinctive aversion to them. And it's a shame because we kill way too many beneficial spiders for the wrong reason.
Okay. About 10 minutes left in this part of Focus. And again, we're talking with Hillary Dole Klein, one of the authors of a book titled Tiny Game Hunting, which looks at environmentally healthy ways to deal with pests in the house and the garden. It's published by the University of California Press. It's in paper. It's not terribly expensive. So if you're need some pest control advice, you can either look for the book or you can try calling us, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Piatone, and it's line 3.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Diatomaceous earth, kills the rootworm, larva that is disastrously affecting our corn. Not only the rootworm larva eats the roots, and then the adult beetle eats the silk and pollen and keeps corn from pollinating. And it's a cheap material, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I came acquainted with it. I began, found it in a byproduct from the food industry. They use diatomaceous earth as a filter in processing certain in the food industry. Mm-hmm. And I used it as a waste product, applied it to my farmland, and I find that it controls rootworm.
Right, they're very noxious, those rootworms.
Yes, and they are, and it's, we have to use a quite poisonous, I don't know if Lors band or different types of poisons to control rootworm larvas. And is anything being done, or why can't we use more of this diatomaceous earth?
It's great that you're using that. How do you apply it?
Well, I apply it
on the soil?
Inject it into the soil with the soybean waste product.
Mm-hmm.
I inject it into the soil in large amounts. I don't know if there's that much diatomaceous earth because it comes off filters. They also use it in the in storing grain. It, as you said, it irritates and kills beetles and fleas and whatever's in the grain.
Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't hurt us. So.
No. It doesn't hurt us.
Well, you should spread the word on that about your success with it.
Well, I should. But I was wondering if I think possibly one of the reasons that we aren't hearing much about it is it's not an expensive product. I don't know. You know, I know it's a diatom or this prehistoric. Where does it come from? Where is it mined? Or do you know anything about it?
I think it's mined. Some of it is mined here near where I live. I'm in Santa Barbara, California, and there's in Lompoc, on the coast north of here. They mine it.
Okay. Well, now I've seen it at our local elevator or grain elevator. Cans or in pound containers to be used for ants, and I've used it. It works.
Well, that's great. It's wonderful to hear from a commercial grower like you that it's how effective it is.
Yes, it is. It is effective, and it should be. I think possibly the reason that it isn't used is because it's cheap. It isn't a product of corporate America.
Right.
I've got another question. I've got some evergreen trees that are dying. I think just too it. Is there? Do you know anything about the beetles or whatever could be affecting?
I know that some people come in and just cut down the trees because they don't haven't really figured out what to do with them. I'm not an expert on this.
Mm-hmm.
I think you would have to get an arborist to come and tell you.
Sure.
Some of the beetles might have natural enemies that could be introduced, but I'm not really sure.
I'm going to have to take my diatomaceous earth out there. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call. Let's go to southeastern Illinois. We have somebody else here, line one. Hello.
Yes, I came in late in the program, and I think surely somebody must have already asked the question, but what about roaches?
What about what?
Roaches.
Oh, cockroaches. Yep. Do you have them in Illinois?
Oh, yes.
Oh, cockroaches are probably the most loathed of all the insect pests. And boric acid is a wonderful pesticide for cockroaches because they haven't developed any kind of resistance to it the way they have with a lot of commercial poisons.
You just sprinkle it around, don't you?
Well, in the case of boric acid in cockroaches, it has to be applied very carefully because cockroaches are very clever. And if you've applied it in such a way that it's in a clump, they'll just walk around it. So it has to be sprayed in such a way that it's just evenly coats the floor and then preferably the cracks and the recesses where cockroaches like to hide. And they walk through it, and then when they groom themselves, they ingest it. There's some wonderful traps that are coming out, though, for cockroaches that are using things like fungus and that they attract the cockroach and then kill it with non-toxic methods. And I think we should keep an eye out for those and buy them when we find them.
Aren't there some things that aren't they developing things that mess up their breeding?
Yes, exactly. The juvenile growth hormone regulators that they can, which are also something I think that if you see them, you should try that.
Mm-hmm. One other thing, I don't have a cockroach problem at the moment, but I have in the past another one that I don't have at the moment, but. What about, I think they're called silverfish, they get in around books.
Yes, silverfish are, there are traps that you can buy, little packets that you can buy that I also believe contain boric acid for silverfish. You also should make sure that the area is very dry where you're storing books and vacuum constantly. And you can also sprinkle, if you did have to store books, you could sprinkle some diatomaceous earth in the bottom of the box to take care of them.
Okay,
those
thank
little,
you.
The silverfish packets seem to work. They look like little, almost like little packets of sugar, and you can spread them around.
All right, thank you. We'll go here to, we got somebody on a cell phone on our line 4. We'll go right there. Hello.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Sure. I don't know if you've answered this question before, but do you have any solutions for mosquitoes or black flies or pests when you're outside other than 100% DEET?
Oh, we don't exactly recommend DEET, but we have a wonderful formula here in the book that you could try that's a great repellent for them, and it makes use of, have you heard of using Avon Skin So Soft bath oil?
Yes, I have.
And you would mix 1 cup of that with 1 cup of water and add a tablespoon of eucalyptus oil.
Oh, okay.
And that's a marvelous repellent.
Wonderful. Okay. Very good. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. I know this is a product, and the Avon folks didn't set out to make an insect repellent.
That's right.
But somebody apparently discovered that it would work. At least some people found that it would work. Now, I've tried it myself, and it doesn't seem to bother the mosquitoes one bit.
Uh-huh.
Some folks have had a lot of success using
Should try it with the eucalyptus oil.
Well, now that might just be the thing there, the extra added wrinkle that would make a difference.
It's a problem because DEET is so effective.
Right.
That people, you know, who wants to be bitten?
Yeah. And but I know that some people are a little concerned about DITA, and particularly
very,
when it comes to their
too.
Kids too, because
exactly.
You know, they,
when the label says don't let your kids rub their eyes. I mean, who can keep their kids from rubbing their eyes? Nobody.
So this is that product, and you mix it with some water, and I assume eucalyptus oil is the kind of thing maybe you in a natural product store or something like that.
Probably an herb store. That
you'd be able to find
yes.
it. Okay. Well, there again, something for people to try. Let's see. Next, we'll go to Urbana for someone else right here, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have had a little tiny bug in my house for the past several days. It's about a 16th of an inch long and even less wide, oval-shaped, kind of brownish color. And I finally tracked it down into my cupboard that was in the cereal.
Mm-hmm.
Dry cereal.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what that is? It's just the tiniest little thing.
It's some sort of a pantry pest. Be sure to throw away
the cereal.
The cereal, yes,
yeah.
And don't just dump it in the garbage. You know, seal it before you throw it away.
Okay.
They're very mobile, these pantry pests.
Can I put it in the compost pile?
Well, you could. Except that you just don't want it coming back in the house.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm thinking that it might be a drugstore beetle.
Drugstore beetle?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure which one you have, but
it's very tiny.
Very tiny, yeah.
Not even a 16th of an inch long.
And it was probably in the product when you bought it.
I don't know.
Probably was.
I think that generally is the way these stored product pests. I think isn't that pretty much the way
yeah.
that it is? They actually are in the product. That's the way they get into your.
That's where they get in
house.
There in the first place.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, but you don't have any particular name. It's just you think that's the particular name, drugstore beetle.
I'm not exactly sure whether it's that. It could even be maybe even carpet beetles.
No, it's not carpet beetle. I know what carpet.
Little for that.
No.
Okay. No, I'm not exactly sure what it is.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to know, so thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, thanks. One, I guess we'll do one more here, and that's Chicago, line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Did you ever hear the formula of cocoa, powdered sugar, and boric acid for roaches and ants? They say they love that.
Well, that would be similar to the one that I'm recommending, but I actually hadn't heard of adding cocoa to it.
Well, that's what they're after.
It would be my great idea.
The trouble is you might bring them in from somewhere else just to get in on it. And on mosquitoes, isn't there a certain breed of small fish that in a pond that
yes.
the fish will eat the mosquito larva?
Yes. And it's called the gambusa.
Pardon?
Gambusa, G-A-M-B-U-S-A.
Uh-huh. And if you stock a pond with that, you don't have any mosquito larvae, is that right?
It's a great idea.
Yeah. I also once heard if you just pour some oil on the water, the pupae or the whatever, they
yes.
can't breathe. That little
that's
tube
right.
Is blocked by the oil and the water.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's an old... How did they... When they built the Panama Canal, they had mosquitoes and malaria down there. What did they do in that case? Just live with it, or did they have some... In those 1912.
It was pretty terrible.
I think a lot of people just died.
Yeah, well, they must have learned something since
they
then.
One of the things I think they did down there was they figured out about draining ditches and stuff, that, you know, the standing water is what's so... So I certainly don't envy anybody that had to work under those conditions, though.
We're going to have to stop because we've used our time, and I want to say thanks to everybody who called. And again, if people are interested in reading, though, more about the subject, this book that we mentioned, it's titled Tiny Game Hunting, and it's published by the University of California Press in a paper by Adrian Wenner and our guest Hillary Dole Klein. Thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me on.